In this Friday edition, we share some outtakes from the Native Learning Center training webinar. The topic is the skill set of developing goals using a logic model that is specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. The speaker is Vincent Franco, the Compliance and Resource Development Director.
Not that complicated. This is a skill. It's a little bit of an art and a little bit of a science that I do a lot of instruction with those individuals, both in the Native American community and outside, you know, for nonprofits and other organizations, anyone basically that's interested in grant writing and grants management. Understanding how to take initiatives and turn them into goals and then convert them into outcomes and results, that's all about goal development. And that's the tool, that's the mechanism I'm going to be explaining. And it's the process that's used not only for developing goals for our immediate future, but also for long-term projections in what's commonly referred to as strategic planning. Strategic planning is no more complicated than taking goals that we've developed for the current fiscal or current year and working with them and manipulating them to be pushed out into subsequent years. So we'll be talking about that. Let's get into the skill set, the process of developing goals. I'm going to use what's referred to as the logic model. You might be familiar with this. This phrase is becoming more and more popular in the philanthropic community. It was created, the logic model concept was created by the United Way individuals, corporate United Way, 15, 20 years ago maybe. And it's been adopted pretty much as the go-to process for trying to define and break down initiatives and goals into measurable, attainable bites or measurable and attainable processes. So I'm going to refer to it as the logic model. Every logic model, every goal development, every strategic plan for a board is going to be based on its mission. And it shows the logic model process is comprised of four very important parts. One, and this is the vernacular I'm going to use. Now, you may call this something different, but this is what I'm going to be using for the example. Four components. The very first one is referred to as the initiative, the major initiative. Every organization is going to have at least one, if not three or four or a dozen, what I refer to as major initiatives, big, huge projects. And they could be a variety of different things in a variety of different subject areas, anything from building and staffing and using a multi-use facility for elders, for veterans, for youth. That could be one. Infrastructure could be another major initiative. Low-income housing could be a major initiative for another organization, and so on. The product might change, the initiative might change, but the process stays the same. So when I refer and use the word or the phrase initiatives, I'm referring to the big projects. You may call them something different. Now, every initiative must have, you must be able to break down any type of major initiative into what I refer to as bite-sized pieces. You've got to be able to do that. Now, those bite-sized pieces I'm referring to as goals or baby steps. You know, every initiative is going to have at least one, if not a series, if not multiple goals associated with it. And every goal that we generate must, in the short term, have some kind of measurable outcome. And in the long term, have some kind of result. Otherwise, if we don't have these four components or something that resembles these four components, regardless of the title we assign to them, if we don't have these mechanisms in place, our initiatives are nothing more than dreams, right? If we can't, you know what a dream is, it's a nebulous picture, right? It's a want. But an initiative, if it's done properly, is going to have tangible goals with outcomes and results that are generated. If it doesn't, it's not real. The logic model is nothing more than the major initiative or series of major initiatives, and each major initiative must have a series, at least one, if not a series, of measurable goals that are SMART, that are systematic, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time sensitive. Use the acronym SMART to represent that our goals have to be tangible and time sensitive. Otherwise, the goals are not goals. They're wishes. The SMART acronym: specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Your goals need to be all those things. So we've got to be able to have the skill sets. We've got to be able to have the basic understanding to break down our initiatives that could be achieved over a certain period of time that generate in the short term. There must be some kind of measurable result. And that's usually measured as a percentage increase or a percentage decrease. If our major initiative is the reduction of opioid use, of course, the result long term is going to be a decrease, right? It's going to be a reduction, hopefully, of the use of that particular dangerous drug. So in that regard, our results we want them to show a negative or a decrease. Where on the other hand, if our initiative goal is to increase job performance or job opportunities for tribal members, then we're looking at the long term, we're looking at an increase, aren't we? We're not looking at a decrease, we're looking at an increase. The product is going to change in our goal development, but the process remains the same. The major focus, it's a major focus area for the nonprofit, for the board, for the tribe, whatever. It's a major focus area or a project or a program that has significance to the organization. Whether you're creating that as the grant writer, whether you're creating that from scratch as a board member, or whether it's dictated to you or delegated to you from the community at large or from a bigger body or from tribal council, the initiative is the major program or series of major programs. The goal, quantifiable, fact-based steps of intent, of progress, moving towards an increase, ultimate increase, or an ultimate decrease to some extent. Otherwise, your goals are too nebulous and they're not going to be any assistance in the completion of your major initiative. And this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the difficulty comes. It's easy, I think, to come up with the major initiative. That's a wish list in many regards. Where the difficulty comes in and where the midnight oil is burned is trying collectively to convert those initiatives into measurable something that's tangible, so that you can take things where we take the very big, huge concept and try to methodically break it down into smaller, manageable tasks. That's what the goals are. For every major initiative, we've got to have something that resembles, I'm calling it a goal, you may call it something else, but it's a goal that's measurable and attainable and realistic. We're looking at hopefully generating real numbers here in the short term. For example, how many people will be reached or will benefit in the short term? And what is that short term? A month, 6 months, a year? How many people will benefit? How many people will attend? How many people will achieve? It says how many events will occur. The result, at the far right column, the result, different product, the percentage of improvement will be achieved. The result would be that, not, for example, 90% of the attendees have a much better understanding that we can break down and do some kind of measurable outcome. As board members or as folks that are responsible for generating these kinds of initiatives and goals and strategic plans, have to take in scenarios or the possibility that our well-laid plans for the short term could be changed in the long term, and how do we adjust our SMART goals and subsequently our strategic plan to accommodate those. We have to be prepared to make those changes. My advice is to plan accordingly. Don't be afraid to sit down and calculate what your SMART goals are that would be a good fit for your major initiatives, and go through that mechanism But be prepared that if you're projecting out into subsequent fiscal year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I wouldn't recommend going any more than 3 or 4 years in the future because things are going to change. There's no way, I don't have a crystal ball, I'm not a wizard, there's no way, there's no way that I can project with any accuracy, with any 100%, what actually is going to happen in subsequent or fiscal years. I cannot guarantee that those numbers are going to be accurate in 23, 24, and 25. That is why smart goal development, the initiative, all the goals that we have to develop and the process that we go through using the logic model system and the strategic plan has to be, must be, a living document. It has to be a document that we adapt and adopt and change as needed. As board members, we have to understand that there's no way that we can develop a strategic plan today and project what's going to happen in 2025 with any reasonable amount of accuracy. We would become obsolete theoretically 6 months, definitely a year from now as things change. We have to design our goals and, of course, our strategic plan to be flexible. Strategic plans are not something that is done once every 3 or 5 years, printed out on heavy stock paper and put in a three-ring binder and put on a shelf somewhere. It's really a living document. I call it, it's a desktop type of, whether it's electronic or hard copy, it's something that as board members, we need to part under, we need number one to understand the flexibility and the adaptability of the program because it's a necessity. Number two, we need to be discussing this at every meeting. Where are our goals going? Where are we currently? And where are we going? Do we have to change our projections because we were not able to raise as much funds as we did, as we projected? That's going to change everything moving forward. So the second thing is it has to be a living document that we address and we deal with all the time as board meetings. And secondly, we can't be afraid of the possibility that we're going to change it. We're going to issue addendums to our strategic plan because we need to, because it could be, you don't want to be in a situation where you do it now and then a year from now, it's totally unmistakably and irrevocably obsolete. We don't want to put ourselves in that situation. Best practice of boards across the board, regardless of industry, is their strategic plan is living, breathing, adaptable, flexible, changeable. Call it what you want. Maybe you don't use the word strategic plan. Maybe it's just smart goal development and future projections because we know we're going to have to change things, if not annually, perhaps semi-annually or quarterly, maybe even monthly, tweaking our current goals in the short term so that our long-term results are not skewered or totally off base. Because things changed, even a little bit, changed a little bit in the current year would have major repercussions 3 years down the road. That's why when I hear organizations that are projecting with, and they brag about being accurate in projecting 5 and 10 and 15 and let alone 50 years of strategic plans, I'd say to myself, how in the world can they do that? It's very, very it's a methodical process that every organization must go through, but it's a methodical process to develop realistic SMART goals for the current fiscal year and maybe the next fiscal year, in this case, fiscal year 23 or calendar year 23, let alone 24, 25, and 26. But best practice would be being able to put yourself in a situation as a board where you can change it. I hope that makes sense. Goal development using the logic model system is something that we all should be familiar with. Call it what you want, that's what I call it. But I'm moving away from the phrase strategic plan because it has a connotation assigned to it that it's something that's written in stone. When in reality, it's just the opposite. Strategic planning is must be flexible. It must be adaptive, and it must be something that boards, if they're going to be move away from dysfunction and be more functional and efficient and effective, it needs to be a living document. So, but everyone plays a role in the in our function and our completion of our goals and our initiative. I think that's a teachable moment for every organization, that everyone, including all board members, need to have the skill sets and need to understand where the responsibilities lie for these kind of reports, these kind of financial statements. Because if you look at it, from a different perspective, your financial reporting is tied into this, your financial health and well-being is tied into these goal developments and strategic plans. And we have, as board members, we have a fiduciary responsibility for the health and wellness of the organization. So we are obligated as board members to be involved in this process and to streamline it as much as possible.
This is the Friday edition. The speaker is Vincent Franco, the Native Learning Center Compliance and Resource Development Director. Vincent talks more about effective meetings and records.
I'll spend just a little bit of time here. Effective meetings it makes the difference between function and dysfunction. Written agendas are always useful, sometimes mandatory. Focusing boards should always focus on moving forward, always focus on the strategic initiative to move forward, how we're going to accomplish the goals that we set for us, the strategic goals that we've put in place, call them what you want. How are we moving forward with our fundraising, with our programs? That's what boards do. They should be spending the bulk of their time, probably 80% of their time, looking at forward initiatives, forward thinking initiatives. Let the staff handle the day-to-day activities. Theoretically, that's how it's supposed to work. I think the important rule of thumb for boards is they must adopt some kind of a modified version of parliamentary procedure. So they have a roadmap to follow. They have procedures or processes in place for conducting meetings so that they can be efficient and effective and get the work done that needs to be done. And parliamentary procedure is something that'll help touch on this from a board perspective. You do need to understand how it works and the responsibilities. Minutes should be, I talked about an agenda, of course, minutes should be provided, written preferably, either in hard copy or electronic, that are maintained and are provided to board members at every meeting so they can go back, whether you put them in a hard copy, what we're calling a board manual or board book, a very good idea that contains all the important documents, financial, operational, etc. These days, some boards are just a little more sophisticated. They provide laptops and access to electronic files. Fine, if you or a combination of both, that's fine. But in one way, shape, or form, we need to have agendas. We need to have minutes from prior meetings. We need to have all those things available, accessible to our board members at any time. Not just board meetings, at any time. And we need to have safe, we need to safeguard that material because they become part of the corporate records. And we need to maintain those records. Our funders require it. Our program reviewers require it. The IRS requires it. We have to maintain. The length of maintaining differs by your funding source. It could be 3 years, it could be 5 years, it could be 7 years. You need to check that with your funding sources and come up with some kind of policy agreement within as a board to how long are you going to maintain these records.
We'll end with building effectiveness of boards.
Building effectiveness of boards or committees or any organization that has to meet on a regular basis. Other than parliamentary procedure that we just talked about, some other functional things that or some other things that could lead to dysfunction, not having regular meetings, poor organizational skills, governance principles not applied, a lack of trust between the board and staff or vice versa, or between board members. could lead to dysfunction. Public speaking by board members on representing the board and saying things that they're not delegated or not given authority to say. We need to manage that. Micromanaging of board members of staff, something we need to avoid. And staff being ignored. There needs to be communication between staff, at least the executive director or chief staff person with the board. There needs to be a vertical communication system from the top down and the bottom up. Let the chief staff person communicate with subordinate staff. But there needs to be communication. And I've seen boards struggle with that, that they don't communicate with staff and vice versa. And guess what happens? They don't know what each other's doing. And dysfunction occurs. Surprise, surprise. So we want to avoid that. Some more things. Nothing happens. We want to engage board members in the same way we want to engage volunteers, committee members, staff. We want to get people involved from the get-go. If you need to develop job descriptions for board members, even if you need to develop job descriptions for volunteers, depending upon the capacity they come in, they're working in, then do so. So that you have some kind of parameters to work with. So the kiss of death here is not getting people involved, not taking advantage of the human resources that we have at our disposal. Another dysfunctional, mission's not clear, financial statements or financial information is missing, disrespect to each other, that's like board members not talking to each other. We got to try to mitigate that situation. Bury the hatchet if it needs be. For the good of the organization, there needs to be respect and communication at all levels with everybody. Otherwise, you're going to fail. The organization's going to fail. Meetings are dominated by a few. Hopefully, parliamentary procedure and the practice of it will help you to mitigate a meeting dominated by people who seem to that are hard pressed to tell you how to operate the organization over and over and are very willing to share their opinion. That's well and fine. That's good. We need to have that information, but there's a time and place for everything. Like to say is managed growth. We need to take control of the situation, including our board, including using parliamentary procedure to take advantage of it for the betterment of the organization. And that's what we're there for. The organization is floundering for some reason and or there's a high turnover, either of board members of staff. We want to try to identify that and try to mitigate. So some functional things, the other side of the coin, functional boards or committees, operation, regular meetings are held with agenda, with parliamentary procedure or a variation of it, and with documented reports and minutes as a follow-up that are disseminated and kept readily available, hard copy or electric or electronic or a combination of the both. The organization and the mission is not only understood, it's made available and it's talked about. Yolanda said, can the staff member contact a board member directly instead of going through a chief staff? That's a dangerous situation unless it is included in your policies and procedures. For example, and I'm hard pressed to come up with example, but maybe the bookkeeper needs to talk to the treasurer about an audit or something. My personal opinion is that board members should not be venturing to talk independently to individual staff members, and the same respect should be from staff members talking to board members. It should not be done. It should not circumvent the chief staff person, the executive staff person. So that works vertically. That works from the top down and the bottom up. You got to be very careful when staff people are circumventing the process and vice versa. Executive director needs to be aware of when board members are doing this, and the board needs to be cognizant of the fact that this should not happen. They should not be having conversations that circumvent the staff person, the chief staff person. Why have that person in the first place if you're not communicating and using that person as a liaison to subordinates? Okay, other things function. Guidelines are established and followed. Accountability and transparency is maintained, of course. A strategic plan or whatever you want to call it. SMART goals, as I was talking about earlier, they're in place. And fundraising is placed. I talked about that on day one, that a fundraising plan is part of the strategic plan and that it's part of the vernacular of the board, that it's talked about as much as the goals are on a regular basis, the looking forward of events, of fundraising, and that the fundraising itself should be multifaceted, not just grants, not just donations, but maybe planned giving, contributions from corporate entities, from private individuals, multifaceted approach, multimedia approach to fundraising. And that needs to be shared and talked about. Meetings have a focus. That's why we need to put an agenda out there and be careful about our agenda and methodical about not only designing the agenda, but facilitating that agenda. Meetings have a focus and are productive. Financials are provided every meeting. Open communication is strived and is encouraged. It's encouraged as long as we follow the parliamentary procedures that we've adopted and put in place. There needs to be a mechanism that we've adopted. There needs to be protocols for it. So yes, communication is encouraged with, with our protocols. And that's primarily when referring to meetings themselves. Little turnover, hopefully that's a goal. Little turnover and term limits are in place for board members. Hopefully you get to that point. Evaluations are conducted for staff and perhaps evaluations are done for board members. As long as you have a job description for board members with goals for each board member and for the board itself, then you can do an evaluation. Otherwise, you have nothing to base your evaluation on. Same thing with grant writing. You need to have goals in place to be able to answer the question, how are you going to measure your success? Same thing applies here with board members. Effective committees, if you have them, that are structured to mirror your board. In other words, are set up with parliamentary procedure. They follow the same protocols as your board does. They're little mini mirror images. They're mini-me's of the board. Your committees, if you're going to have them, are mini-me's of the board. They should operate the same way. And you should always strive to have at least one board liaison assigned to each committee, because the board liaison becomes that, the spokesperson for the committee along with the chair. So maybe even the board member can serve as the chair of the committee. And that way the committee is run effectively by a board member and the communication coming from the committee to the board is actually coming from a board member. So that's a thought as you move into committees, if you can do it. Consider having a grievance policy where a staff is free to confront a personnel issue or personal assault. Absolutely. That's going to tie into your code of conduct. You should have a code of conduct policy, not only for your staff, but even your board members should have a code of conduct that we talked about earlier in the week that you can document. Have a form as an official document that the chief staff and so board can read and perhaps talk to. Yeah, okay. If you're having that issue with your chief staff person, those mechanisms being in place, like the code of conduct, conflict of interest, those need to be put in place that would include a grievance process, not only for staff, but maybe even for board members too, to avoid confrontational situations. Or
the Friday edition is a production of KIDE Hoopa Tribal Radio. The guest speaker has been Vincent Franco. We used audio clips from his webinar on Board of Directors Training Part 3. This Friday edition was edited by Joseph Orozco, lead producer, KIDE Hoopa. We thank you for listening.